that is an interest. Churches are interesting places. Like when you walk in on a Sunday morning in a church that maybe you don't know anything about or haven't visited. I mean, you don't know what you're walking into. Like you sit alongside people. Now, granted, most of us have been going to this church for a long time, and so you kind of know what you're getting into, which is even more impressive that you're here, right? Because you kind of know what you're into. But I think about the church that I grew up at. I think about the people that I worshipped alongside when I was a kid. I didn't go to church until I was about 11 or 12, but I think about the people that I worship. I was a preacher, so there was one Church of Christ in Defiance County that we went to, and there was one Church of Christ in the next county over, so it was pretty small pickings. And so you kind of connected with each other a little bit differently because we had a little camaraderie there. And the preacher next county over was arrested when I was an adult because he had some inappropriate things with his children, and spent some time in jail, and he's preaching again. There was another guy, an older gentleman in our church, just a dear old man, was helping raise his kids and his grandkids, and done some inappropriate things with his granddaughter, and a restraining order against him, and all kinds of things happened there. There was Gary, who was really my mentor growing up, who I've probably mentioned before. He was probably about my age right now, and well, I was on vacation with his family and had an asthma attack and died all of a sudden. I think about his wife. His wife still goes to church with my mom, and they kind of are our buddies, and they kind of look out for each other and watch out for one another and go out to lunch on Sundays and probably gossip more than they should. Try to stymie it, but it just seems to be inherent in her a little bit. I think about the people that I've worshipped beside all the. It's a mess, right? Like there are these champion stories, and there are these stories of despair, and stories of hope, and stories of disappointment. The preacher that I knew who was arrested, and his son went to church camp. Our kids are going to church camp. We spent a couple weeks at church camp together. He's dead. I think he was murdered when he was in his 20s. Fascinating, right? These people that you meet along the way, and the only thing that really drives you together is the fact that you're kind of in this hopeful, stumbling along faith journey where you're trying to figure out life and God and eternity and what's going on. And there are stories along the way that almost devastate you to the point of, I don't know if I can keep doing this. I think about the things that I have seen churches do to people, and I wonder, how are you still hanging on? And you see people who go through things, and you wonder, how could you possibly trust in God? Some of you in this room, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you continue to just keep on keeping on. One of the things we do every Sunday is we just take a moment and we just ask for prayer requests. And oftentimes, those are times where we share with one another moments where I don't know if this person is going to make it on their own because of this death or this tragedy or this sickness or this diagnosis or whatever. And the reason we bring it to the church is because we need each other. We need the collective faith and encouragement from one another. And so when you walk into any random church on any random day, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, you look around this morning at the people sitting around you, and if you've been around a while, you probably have a good sense of some of the journeys that are represented even in this room this morning. People whose faith journey has taken them one place or another. This past Friday night, we had a minister from up in New York in Rochester who was passing through, and knew him but didn't really know him, but he stayed at our house that night, and we got to talking to him, and he's from Australia. He grew up in a church in Australia, and it was just fascinating to listen about how his life journey had taken him from Australia to Memphis, where he went to Harding Graduate School, and to now he's in New York. And irony of ironies, his wife is from the Center Road Church of Christ in Kokomo, which is a church that we do a lot of things with in our work camp, and there'll be some at church camp. And it's just every person that you come across who has a relationship with God, if you will allow yourself to just talk to them a little bit and listen how God is working in their lives. One of the disservices that we do in our fellowship sometimes is we talk so much about church and how our relationship with church, and we don't talk enough about our relationship with God and how God is journeying along with us and how God is leading us and how Christ is doing things in our life. As we begin to reflect on our message this morning, that's my invitation to you this morning, is to consider how Christ is working in your life, how your relationship with Jesus is affecting your life. Because as weird and odd as it is to think about the people that we're journeying alongside, I always think of Mary in the church I grew up. So Mary had a learning disability. She was always just kind of a little off kilter. She'd ride her bike all over town, and she had a phobia of water. And I wasn't there when she was baptized, but it was a big deal for her to try to figure out how they were going to baptize her because she was deathly afraid of water. There was Donna, who sat in the front row, who was blind and used to sing out from her pew. And so I wonder what it would have been like to hang out with the church, like the first churches. We often think about the churches in Acts, because obviously that's where everything starts off in the book of Acts, and the disciples are taking the message of Jesus and they're beginning to unfold the early church and connect the ministry of Jesus with the ministry of the church. And what we don't often think about is, I wonder what it was like when there were people who Jesus had taught, people Jesus had interacted, that you went to church with. Now, it's difficult for us to do this because them going to church and us going to church probably didn't look anything at all alike. They were living life together. They were spending time together probably every day. But just imagine, if you can, like try to put yourself in the situation where you're going to church, you're part of a church, and Lazarus's family is there. Like Lazarus's family, who, yeah, just a decade ago, and they tell the story, and anybody new who comes to Christ, you've got to meet these people. And so they go and they introduce them to Lazarus's kids, and they're like, yeah, Jesus, he was dead. Dad was dead, and Jesus came and rose him back from the dead. Like, the faith of that church, I hope, was strong. Because anytime somebody was struggling, Lazarus' family would get up and say, look, you don't know what struggle is. You don't know what was going on. Or imagine that some of the older members of the church had been at the miracle of multiplication. Like, they had eaten the bread. And so when it was time to testify on Sundays and share with one another in the body, somebody would get up and go, yeah, man, there was two fish and some loaves. That's all there was. But there were thousands of us, and the bread was good. Top shelf stuff. Maybe there are people who had been at the wedding in Cana. Like, we kind of take those stories and make them larger than life. But if they're true stories, I think they are, then those people pilfered into these early churches in the area. And so just imagine if those families with first, second, third hand knowledge of the things that we're reading in the Bible, wouldn't it have been compelling to be part of those churches? Wouldn't it have been interesting to sit down and have a fellowship meal with those people? Maybe some of John's family, maybe Jesus' nieces were in your church. I've never heard anybody say that ever. But I started thinking about it this week, and who's to say that Jesus' kin wasn't in your church? It seems to me, I mean, you talk about a celebrity preacher culture that we have, or celebrity Christian, imagine that. Like, yeah, Ron Cole sits in the back corner, and he's a really cool guy. He's got a sweet beard, but Peter's family, they sit over on that side, and let's talk about what was Peter like when he was a kid? What was Jesus like? Like, all of his siblings and everybody who was a part of his family, we would have wanted to know what that would have been like. Well, with all that in context, the person we're going to study today, what an amazing testimony him, his family, and the city must have had about this guy. It's a story of Legion in Luke chapter 8. Clementine read from the other account in Matthew chapter 8, and there's some kind of significant differences, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But imagine that this is the testimony that somebody offers when they get up and share with the brotherhood. Luke chapter 8, verse 26. So they arrived in the region of the Gerasenes, across the lake from Galilee. As Jesus was climbing out of the boat, a man was possessed by demons, came out to meet him. For a long time he had been homeless and naked, living in the tombs outside of the town. As soon as he saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell down in front of him. And then he screamed, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Please, I beg of you, don't torture me." For Jesus had already commanded the evil spirit to come out of him. The spirit had often taken control of the man. Even when he was placed under guard and put in chains and shackles, he simply broke them and rushed out into the wilderness, completely under the demon's power. Jesus demanded, "What's your name?" "Legion," he replied, for he was filled with many demons. The demons kept begging Jesus not to send them into the bottomless pit. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby, and the demons begged him to let them enter the pigs. So Jesus gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned. When the herdsmen saw it, they fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been freed from the demons. He was sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed, perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what had happened told the others how the demon-possessed man had been healed, and all the people in the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave him alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side of the lake. The man who had been freed from the demons begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him home, saying, "No, go back to your family and tell them everything that God has done for you." So he went all through the town proclaiming the great things that Jesus had done for him. The story of Legion is pretty well known. Oh yeah, that's the one with the pigs and the naked guy running around with long hair being crazy, right? Like, we know that story. It's pretty easy to picture. It is interesting, though, because there's an accounting in Matthew 8, this is in Luke 8, and there's some pretty significant differences. First of all, we're not exactly sure where this even happened. Luke says the Gerasenes, Matthew says Gadarenes, which is there's some ambiguity in the Greek manuscript. It seems as though it took place near the city of Gadara, which is about 6 miles from the Sea of Galilee, which is a little closer than the Gerasenes. But regardless of exactly where it took place, what's clear is that this was a Gentile area. And it's interesting because it's the only place that Luke talks about Jesus really doing his ministry to and within the community of the Gentiles. Probably the bigger difference is the fact that in Matthew there's two demon-possessed guys, and in Luke there's only one, and his name is Legion. Nobody's really exactly sure why Matthew chose to do it this way, or Luke chose it to do this way. Some people have suggested that maybe Matthew was saying, well, Jesus healed a lot of guys that way, and this is kind of just an example of how it went down. This morning we're to focus on Luke's account and a guy named Legion. And this whole idea of demon possession is kind of a difficult one for us to grasp. In my whole life, I've never met somebody who I felt like, this person was definitely possessed by a demon. There have been preschoolers, maybe, that I have questioned that possibly, especially on the heels of Vacation Bible School, that maybe. But in all seriousness, has you ever come across somebody who you wondered, oh, this person is under the influence of something? Nothing I would sign my name to and say, yes, exactly, this is definitely what was happening here. The scientific age has kind of come along and helped us doubt this kind of act. And so we've kind of explained it away. Well, maybe they weren't demons as much as it was a mental illness or some kind of physical ailment or something, because we don't see the kinds of things that Legion is going with. Or do we? Do we see people who lose control of themselves some way, somehow? It seems to be kind of a fine line to walk. I have a Facebook friend who's a minister. A lot of you know him. His son is autistic. And he relayed the story, I think it was last week, about being at an airport or somewhere, and somebody came and started praying over his son that they would take the demon away to heal their son. And his dad was talking about how horrifically hurtful and painful that was to his son. There's a lot of terrible things that are done in the name of this whole discussion. It's difficult to know what to deal with, because from the straightforward, literal way, it seems like that's what we should do. It's pray the demon away when it comes to things of mental disease or illnesses or whatever it is, that somehow there is a demon there. And for a long time, and demons and supernatural things were kind of used to explain things that science came along and said, no, actually, there's a pretty reasonable scientific explanation for the way things happen. However, I'm guessing that you have met people who come under the influence of things that seem to do things that are illogical, unreasonable, things that don't make sense. When it comes to some of the bigger areas of our life, it's fascinating to see how people can seemingly come under the influence of things like sports. It's a great example, right? People do things that don't make any sense. Music can do that to people. Politics can certainly do that to people. Power. People seem to be just kind of intoxicated with some of these things, and they lose their sense. Well, is that the same as demon possession? I don't know. But I know that the legions in my life that I've come across, they don't look like naked guys tied up on the edge of town doing crazy stuff. But there does seem to be other things that are happening. You see, Luke is telling the story in a very deliberate way. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the story is in all three Gospels. And in all three instances, right before this story, is the story of Jesus calming the sea. So right before what we just read in Luke is this story, beginning in verse 22 of chapter 8. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." That's where the whole thing with Legion takes place. So they got into the boat and they set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, said, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up, rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" Jesus asked his disciples. And in fear and amazement, they ask one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." Notice how that question just kind of dangles at the end of that passage. Who is this? Who is this guy? And the next thing that happens is they come across this demoniac man, this guy possessed with a demon. He's already shown, Jesus has, that he's over the physical attributes, that he can take the sea and calm it, that he can remove the storm. And now they come across someone who is affected by something more than just the physical world, that there's some kind of supernatural something going on. Who is this, the disciples are asking. And then Luke and Matthew and Mark, in telling their gospel, says, well, here who he is. He can't even be overcome by the demons, by the supernatural, by the larger-than-life powers that seem to affect our world. Think about the way that people in our world become entrapped by the things in our world. Many of us are entrapped and we don't even realize it. I've already mentioned politics and music and sports and power, but think about other things that tantalize us, that tempt us to give up on the gospel for the power of things like the American dream or freedom or addiction. Yeah, when you start talking about addiction, then all of a sudden, if addiction isn't a power, do you think addiction is demonic? I'll tell you what, if you got somebody in your family addicted to drugs, if you can't explain it by using demonology terms, I don't know what else you can use. I mean, it just doesn't make sense the way people get addicted and it overcomes their life. When you start talking about addiction, you could talk about everything from food to drugs to alcohol to technology to video games to pornography to gambling to shopping to starting fires, coffee, hoarding, and on the list goes. And if we go long enough, there's one that's going to probably touch you a little bit and go, ooh, that's a little close to home. Because we all, there's something persuasive in us that persuades us away from Jesus at the center of our life. Meredith and I were sitting at King's Island last Saturday, a week ago from yesterday. It was like 10 o'clock at night, and we were just people watching, because that's what you do at amusement parks, because it is a glorious place to people watch. And you know, I started noticing just how many fat people there are in the United States. Like, it's just overwhelming how many overweight people there are in our country. Like, you just become, and we've all, we wrestle with it now, probably almost all of us, we need to eat better. It's just so hard to eat well and be healthy in our culture. Who's to say that there's not a demonic power that's at work in us? Why is it so difficult? Because we're addicted to food. We're addicted to excess. We're addicted to sugar. We're addicted to all these kinds of things. And so we have a tendency to read about Legion and say he's this naked guy who's got long hair and he's crazy and he lives at the edge of town and he's locked up and he has nothing to do with my life. And my message to you this morning is that you're dismissing him too easy if that's the way you're doing it. Because my guess is, and we're going to have our board up. We'll get that put up today. All this list of people, this is us. These are our people. This is who we resonate with. Well, we're going to stick Legion up there. And I hope when you see Legion, you're going to think about the addictions in your life, the powers at work in your life, because there's something pulling you away from the gospel. There's something pulling you away from full reliance on Christ. And it might be the way that you feel after you eat a dessert, and so you just keep eating them. And the more you eat them, you don't think about prayer. You don't think about relying on Christ. There was a reason why fasting was a spiritual discipline. Because there's something about eating that can pull us away from Christ. We're not supposed to starve ourselves. We're supposed to put everything in the proper perspective. Caffeine, sex, pornography, all of those things are born of the same power. But before we get too far carried along in this negative aspect, and you feel like, oh man, we're getting beat up this morning. You see, the story of Legion is a story of good news. It's the fact that Legion is delivered from his demons. It's the fact that Legion comes across someone who is finally more powerful than the demons that possess him. Legion is us. I found this quote from N.T. Wright reflecting on this story, and I thought was just really powerful. He says, the point of the story, then, is that the Jesus who has authority to teach people, as he was doing in the Sermon on the Mount, also has the authority over disease, both close at hand and at a distance, over the lives of people who want to follow him, over the winds and waves on the lake, and over the shadowy forces of evil, however we think about them or describe them. That's what we need to know as we ourselves sign on to follow him. That he isn't just somebody with a good idea. That he isn't just somebody who tells us how to establish a better relationship with God. But he's somebody with authority over everything that the physical world on the one hand and that the non-spiritual, non-physical world on the other hand can throw at us. This is a Jesus that we can trust with every aspect of our lives. What's really amazing about the story of Legion is how it disrupts everybody's well-being. I mean, we didn't go back and tear apart the story, but look at the way that it disrupts everybody's life. Obviously, it disrupts Legion's life in a good way. It's one of the most stark contrasts where you have this naked, crazy guy running around screaming, and then when Christ takes the demon out of him, he's sitting there well-clothed, well-spoken, articulate, listening to Jesus. And what's amazing is that everybody doesn't go, wow, look what happened. This is amazing. Instead, what is the people's response? You need to get out of here. You need to get out of our town. Because you have this herds folks who are affected negatively economically because Christ's message had led the demons into the pigs. The pigs had gone over the hill. And what the Bible doesn't remind us of is, hey, those pigs are worth a lot of money. And so the herds folks go talking, I'm guessing this is a small town. And it's like, hey, if the local pigs market's not doing well, then the whole town suffers. And this guy who came in just for the sake of this one person who we'd already come to terms with and put him out the edge of town and shackled him, and hey, we can live with him the way that he is, but we need to eat. We need economic well-being. You've affected all of those things. And the story seems to be that Jesus is going to interrupt our lives. He's going to disrupt it some way, somehow. And probably what's at the crux of the matter in our church, in our country, is that Christ doesn't disrupt very many people's lives. Instead, he comes along and people say, he's a pretty good teacher. He's kind of cool. And worship music is kind of neat. And let's just kind of, it's like Christ light. And we just take what we want, and that's about it. But it seems to me that everywhere along the way in the Gospels that Jesus disrupts people's lives, that they can't go on like they always had because something had changed. Something dramatic was different now. And as we come to the end of the sermon and the end of the message about Legion, we have to start asking the question of ourselves, how is Christ disrupting my life? How is he disrupting what I'm going to do this week or next week or tomorrow? If something should happen, something should be disrupted. Otherwise, what's the point? We got other stuff we can do, other things to do. There's all kinds of great things in our culture to enjoy. We live in opulence and excess. But if Christ is disrupting that, he's calling us to something different, okay then. Let's talk about that. Because in the end, John 10:10 says Jesus has called us it's a better way of doing things. It's a better life. I mean, if you're Legion, then clearly it's a better life. But it's a hard sell to that Gentile community who maybe didn't know much about Jesus that, yeah, this is a better life with all your pigs now floating, or I don't know, was it a lake at the bottom? Floating or dead or whatever it was. It was a big dead pile of pigs somewhere. That their life is better now because of Christ too. That's a hard sell. And I'm wondering if we're more likely to be of that ilk than of Legion. Seems like both sort of kind of relate to us. At the heart of hopefully everything that I ever preach, and hopefully everything that you ever see in the Gospels, is the story of Jesus' compelling of each of us to change our lives, to be shaped and molded to be more like him. So that if you've been here for a year or two, or you've been within Christ's following for 10 or 20 years, then hopefully you look more like him today than you did a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 10 years ago. How is Jesus disrupting your life? One of the ways that he disrupts us is he kind of brings us to our knees. And one of the things that's beautiful about our singing is that it connects us to God in a way that nothing else does. And so this morning, as we finish this message on Legion, I would invite you to sing with us this song and reflect how Jesus is disrupting your life currently. So if you will stand up and sing with us this song.
He became sin, who knew no sin, that we might become his righteousness. He humbled himself and carried the cross. Love so amazing, love so amazing, Jesus Messiah, name above all names, blessed Redeemer, Emmanuel, the rescue for sinners, the ransom from heaven, Jesus Messiah, Lord of all. His body the bread, his blood the wine, broken and poured out all for love. The whole earth trembled and the veil was torn. Love so amazing, love so amazing, Jesus. Jesus Messiah, name above all names, blessed Redeemer, Emmanuel, the rescue for sinners, the ransom from heaven, Jesus Messiah, Lord of all our hope is in you. All our hope is in you. All the glory to you, God, the light of the world, Jesus Messiah, name above all names, blessed Redeemer, you no rescue for sinners, no ransom from heaven, Jesus Messiah, Lord of all, Jesus Messiah.